podcast. So, hey, take two. Hey, folks, thanks for tuning in. This is Mike Lafferty, your host of the BAMF podcast. I'm here tonight with RPG luminaries, Jason Toundrow and Christopher McLaughlin. How you guys doing?
Okay, Chris is an RPG luminary. I'm like RPG footlight.
The always humble Jason Toundrow, ladies and gentlemen.
Wait, you're way too kind, sir. I appreciate that.
It's really a delight to be here. I was just looking through my stack of M&M books, and your name kept coming up, man. I mean, it's like every book I pull out, your name is on that thing.
Well, Ronan's been very good to me. They've been very good to me over the years. But frankly, you know, I've got my niche in the industry. I'm the guy who you come up to the Ronan booth at the con. I'm the one who tells you what time Steve Kenson is due back at the booth.
Right. I think I've actually done that with you once. It was before we had talked, and I think it was at. Do you remember the very few years that there was a Gen Con LA?
Oh yeah! Wow.
There was a Gen Con a West. It lasted for like 3 years.
Back in the 90s, right?
It might have been. I don't really remember the date.
If you remember the ones. Yeah, because that was Noir debuted at one of the LA shows.
Yeah, because I was living out here, so it had to be post 2001.
Yeah.
But I think I did exactly that. I think I went to the Green Room booth and I said, "Where's Steve Kenson?" And this funny looking guy said, "No, I'm kidding. Later." Said he'll be back later. Yeah. Oh, wow. But yes, you have written everything for that company. I swear.
Oh well, you're much, 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 much too kind to me. But yes, Ronan had been very wonderful.
Well, cool. All right, well, hey, we're doing a follow up to a session we had maybe 6-8 weeks back, where the three of us, along with Mr. Dan Taylor of the Heroes Happy Hour webcomic, talked and dished about the new DC 52. And unfortunately, Dan couldn't make it tonight. He had a thing. But we're going to open up the conversation tonight to all comics, Marvel, DC, IDW, whatever you pick up, you know, as an Ashcan at your local Comic Con. And, of course, talk about DC as well, hopefully. But any and all comics you feel like talking about tonight, guys, table is open.
Well, Chris, have you been keeping track of the latest anti-feminist scandal at DC, of which they have so many now?
Well, especially if you get an eye to the history of that company, it's like, oh, another one?
Yeah.
Well, for those who may not know what you're talking about, why don't you set this up?
The latest issue of Suicide Squad, in which Harley Quinn has sex with Deadshot, who, once again, both with their clothes on, because apparently, according to Catwoman, this is how you have sex in the DC universe, is with your costume on. And in the course of intercourse, she compares her vagina to a clown car.
I feel kind of dirty having this conversation, Chris and Jason.
Presumably because people come in and out of it a lot. I guess that's the joke.
I'm glad we have that explicit tag on iTunes. I feel bad if kids are listening to this podcast. I'm too sober for jokes like that, Jason. I'm only on my first drink. Can you wait till later in the podcast for vagina clown car jokes? We're working on Octomom material. It'll be great.
I didn't make this up, man. You have to blame Suicide Squad.
You know, why did they name this character Harley Quinn? Why couldn't they just make her some other, you know, female supervillain? Because it's not really the same Harley Quinn we remember from, you know, animated series Batman.
They could have made her Dumb Bunny or something, right? I mean, if they had to do her.
Well, there is a new White Rabbit character. She's the latest Wizard Alice in Wonderland themed villainess in Batman. So yeah, I mean, there's, you know, you could do all kinds of concepts. It doesn't have to be. I mean, you're not using the IP really. It's not really the same character, so why use the same name?
Marketing.
I'm just marketing. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I understand that they redid the character specifically to tie in to her appearance in Arkham Asylum and Arkham City, where she looks in those games more like the woman that we see in the latest issues of Suicide Squad. And let's face it, many more people have played those games than have ever read Batman comics. But it still confuses me. I don't see the wisdom in it. When DC spends 20 years making Harley one of the most recognizable and fun female characters in comics, and then ruins her in 3 months. I just don't get it.
I don't know. Ruin might be smart, might be strong in this case, sorry, because, I mean, once Suicide Squad gets canceled, then Suicide Squad always gets canceled. She'll revert back to
appropriately enough.
It is a comic book about being canceled, so I suppose that's accurate.
It's like Hawkman. As much as you might like Hawkman or his various incarnations, you know his book will get canceled.
Yeah. Well, hey, you're talking to an Aquaman fan, so...
And let me ask you about Aquaman.
Let's talk about Aquaman.
No, because, I mean, everyone told me, hey, Aquaman is back, Aquaman is cool, they're doing Aquaman right.
Yeah.
And, you know, I thought Grant Morrison was doing Aquaman right back in the 90s and JLA. So anyway, I pick up Aquaman, and yeah, he's not bad, I'm digging it, but these villains that Geoff Johns has, the...
The Trench.
I was reading the comic... I picked up number two. And, there's a scene where he and Mara are on their, looking through a childhood photo album, talking about him growing up and skiing. And then these guys show up, and they just remind me of 80s horror movie villains. And they had these little telepathic thought bubbles, and they're like, food, food, food.
Yeah.
And because I'm a horrible person who has sense of humor, 15-year-old, in my head, I was just replacing wherever they said food with, I'm gonna eat ya. Which made the comic a lot more enjoyable for me in a completely different way than Mr. Johns intended. But anyway, my stupid, irrelevant, juvenile stuff aside, how did you guys like the book?
Well, Chris, what do you think of Aquaman? Have you read it?
I have not, frankly, because I read a preview of issue one, and it just seemed so overly defensive.
Yeah.
We root for the fighting underdog. We don't root for the people that just openly pity themselves.
Yeah.
So I just said this and said, no, this is aiming for a younger, whinier demographic than I personally am involved in right now.
Well,
aren't you a high school teacher, Chris?
Yes. And, I shy away from anything that reminds me of going to work.
You teach at a college now, so you're more than just a high school teacher.
Well, I'm teaching college courses to high school students. So I'm in this strange limbo. I'm trapped between Earth 1 and Earth 2, educationally speaking.
There's an Earth 2 series coming. Is that what you're talking about?
Sadly, yes, miniseries only. But I'm looking forward to that.
I am too. And if we buy thousands of copies between the two of us, it'll be a ongoing series.
Yeah, right.
Let's hope.
I sold something like 6 million comics, the new 52. Of course, a lot of that was from people who bought the entire first 52 run.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They bought number one of everything. That obviously is not going to sustain. But maybe it'll get DC out of the black, or out of the red, if they don't know
what they're... For the first time in several years, maybe decades, DC was leading the market in terms of both unit sales and dollars. So
yeah, but they had the biggest. I mean, you can only pull that gimmick like once every decade, right?
Well, maybe less, but yeah.
So I gave you guys a chance, and so now I have to get back to my man Aquaman. I gave you a chance to defend him, but or to trash him, but now I have to defend him. And also, I understand where you're coming from, Chris, when you talk about how the book is very defensive. And that is true, but I have read it, and I read it more than once. And he's not a whiner. He does not complain about his role. What we do see is a lot of other people bashing on him, which is sort of the joke of the book. That for example, a bank robbery is happening, and Aquaman shows up and stops the bank robbery, and the cops show up and say, "Wow, I can't believe it! We got upstaged by Aquaman," and this is their sort of the joke, and everyone's always sort of trashing on him throughout the book. But what we do see is an attempt by Johns to sort of, Aquaman tries to retain some kind of stillness at the center of all of this criticism, and the book is. So far, we haven't seen much of it yet, but it's playing out as a kind of test of Aquaman's character. And so it's like, how are you going to react when everybody that you meet makes fun of you? And so far, he's not the regal Aquaman that we have from Morrison, like you talked about, Mike. Back when the central romantic subplot of the JLA. Was romantic tension between Wonder Woman and Aquaman because they both were leaders of fantastic nations.
Yeah, I was disappointed they never did something with that.
Yeah, well, it's...
Unless you count Flashpoint.
I don't count Flashpoint.
You know, it's played out a little bit off-panel. In, you know, comic books we didn't get a chance to see. Like, do you remember, remember that Rock of Ages storyline when they, Luthor has the Warlagog that can alter all space and time?
Yeah, and they have the Heartlight duplicates and the satellite, and the Joker gets his Philosopher's Stone. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, during that scene, for example, we see a vision of the future, this dark future that Darkseid rules, and which he calls the Wasteland. And in that book, and I've done a lot of close reads on that book, it looks like, you know, Morrison doesn't say it, but it looks like he's sort of saying that Aquaman and Wonder Woman are sort of hooked up in that future. But it's all very off-panel, and it's really, really circumstantial. But anyway, so we don't see really a royal regal character in this book. In fact, he specifically has avoided being royal. He's abandoned his kingly duties. But what we do see is a guy who's sort of trying to – I hate to use this bad metaphor because it's a fish joke, and it's Aquaman, and you know, so naturally it's a fish joke. But he's that sort of fish out of water character. So that he's ostracized by every society he's in. The surface world laughs at him. The Atlantean world reject him. And so he's sort of the perpetual outsider. And that can get very angsty. And if it gets that way, Chris, I totally will buy you a beer. But hopefully it's not.
So you're enjoying Aquaman. The trench don't bother you? You think they're cool villains? You're on board with it? You
know, I don't like the trench very much yet. I think it's really challenging to give Aquaman cool villains. I think he's got a lot of really great ones. I mean, Black Manta's pretty awesome if you get him down to his basics, you know. We all like pirate villains. He's got a cool helmet. And sometimes it doesn't take much more than that. But I remember back when Rick Veitch was working on Aquaman, when they rebooted him the last time. No, excuse me, when they rebooted him two times ago. not the Kurt Busiek reboot, but the reboot before that. And they had a real hard time finding a villain for him then, too. And they came up with this guy called, now I can't remember his name. The First. That was it. The First. It's hard to make water-themed villains. It just really is. But anyway, I'm not too keen on the trench yet. But I think you're right on with the idea that they're riffing on those like 80s horror movies with the creatures that came up out of the ocean and just tried to eat everybody on the boat. I don't even remember what those movies were.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I remember what you're talking about. I think Jones has a thing for that particular genre. I mean, because he's gone back to zombies well several times. I mean, back when he brought back Hawkman the first time, they go to Thanagar, Hawkman's reincarnated, and all of a sudden, boom, there's all these flying zombie Thanagarians. But hey, we're getting old school. We should talk about what's going on in comics right now. Chris, you've been kind of quiet. What are you reading these days?
Well, I'm sort of doing the Tour de Lanterns. If it's got a lantern in it, I'm there. And I'm reading Flash and Hawkman just because somewhere along the lines, I think one of my ancestors made some sort of deal with some otherworldly spirit, and I'm doomed to read every Flash and Hawkman book that comes out to sort of repay this ancient debt from the, you know, the Highlander, my Highland ancestor made.
Is Flash still good?
I'm sorry?
Is Flash still good?
Flash is one of the more readable ones because, 2 months in, it's just any book that isn't trying to be 90s Marvel, I love far more than I should on its own merits.
Yeah,
I sort of lament that it's one of the books that didn't choose to go with one of the more iconic villains in its first story arc because this mob rule guy.
Yeah,
I don't know if it's just it's just not the most best conceived villain ever, or just it's really, really tough to get a handle on why I should give a crap about him given this modern decompressed storyline.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I want to hang around for 6 issues before I finally get a reason to care about this guy.
Totally, yeah.
But, you know, the story moves along well. Nobody's comparing their genitalia to clown cars. the artist.
If it was a Flash, I think that we would, that would be, there's something there.
And the artist has a real flair for capturing super speed action, which in a way, that's visually going to make or break a Flash book.
Yes.
And really, I've been there ever since, Carmine Infantino, with the motion blur.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, I mean, it's great to see somebody come up with a new take on super speed and have it be different and yet very visually appealing. So I give it a lot of credit for the art style on it.
Yeah, that's what I've heard, is that the art is really making that book. That's the reason to watch it.
Hey, Chris, can I ask you a question?
Absolutely.
I've been I'm a big Green Lantern fan, but I was getting a little Geoff Johns out. As much as I like him, he's a great writer. I've been kind of flipping through the Lantern books and not buying them.
Mm-hmm.
What am I missing? How are you liking it? Are you liking it?
Well, I have to admit, as someone who's been majorly disappointed in the reboot so far, I cling to the Lantern books like a drowning man clinging to a piece of wreckage, because they're the one book
they didn't reboot, right?
I think they're completely ignoring it. it's basically picked up right where it left off, and honestly, the quality of the writing and the sales validate that approach, but just simply, I'm not up to issue 3, and I'm wondering, why should I care about these people?
That observation that you made about how all the stories are very decompressed and they're all taking a very long time. I mean, it's not new. I used an example of this when I was teaching last quarter, and we used Bendis's Ultimate Spider-Man,
mm-hmm.
which took like the 16-page original Spider-Man origin and spread it out to 7 issues.
Oh, dear God.
Because
that's what it needed.
But the funny thing is, my students really liked it. And we read both. We read the original story, and then we read the long version. And what it did was it allowed a lot of – Bendis is like the General Lee of writers. He can be incredibly good, or he can be a complete idiot.
Lifelong Virginian, get a little something stuck in the throat there.
Well, I honestly do mean that in the best possible way. But anyway, Bendis can write some stuff really, really well and other stuff really poorly. But when he was writing on Spider-Man on these early issues, because he suddenly had as much space as he wanted, he could take conversations and dialogue and make them long and realistic rather than, well, let's face it, comic book conversations are usually pretty short and abbreviated. Mm-hmm. And he could use this as a characterization tool that made us care about all the supporting cast members. Suddenly Pete had all of these people surrounding him that all had distinctive voices, and they all had interesting stories and personalities, and we cared about them. And of course, you don't see that in the original story, because that's not the point. But is it working in these, in these current 52 issues? Are they using that extra space to do anything interesting?
Well, I can tell you about that. Let me speak to this in terms of the Flash, okay?
Sure.
Okay, I don't hate decompressed storylines in and of themselves. It's just that if you are going to take something that used to take 16 pages and spread it out over seven issues,
yep.
That better be some quality additions. There better be some good stuff added.
Yeah.
And here's the thing, okay? If you want to have some extra time to get into Peter Parker and his supporting cast, that's a hard thing to mess up, because they've been so well developed over the years.
Yeah,
we kind of have a feel for these characters already, and finding some new layers to them is great.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
Barry Allen's biggest shtick is that he's the blandest man in the universe.
Okay.
The only non-bland thing Barry did was back in the mid 80s when he killed Professor Zoom, and they had the big trial over that.
Right.
So now it's been like, hey, let's take 8 issues to introduce the blandest guy in the universe.
Does anyone miss Wally West besides me? Because I miss Wally West.
Right here. Here. Yeah. As a guy who adores, I've got a complete run of the Flash, no pun intended, and
yeah.
I'm reading it for the villains, quite frankly. Barry is the least interesting guy in his own book, and unfortunately, that's still the case. And you throw in a B-list villain, and you're just kind of left with, hey, not 90s Marvel.
this is the other thing that you brought up, and I think it's really interesting. It actually had not occurred to me yet. But so many of the books that we're reading, the first story arcs are all with, like, these B-list villains.
They're mainly coming from D-list writers. I mean, I don't know why we should be overly surprised by that.
You don't think that this is an editorial decision to intentionally use less prominent villains on the first issues that the focus is on the heroes rather than the villains?
Well, I don't know. Batman number one, you have the Joker. If this was an editorial policy, like everything else about this relaunch, it seems to be very unevenly applied. And yeah. Green Lantern 1 is a Sinestro story.
Okay. I remember when Busiek was in charge of relaunching the Avengers, and he relaunched them, and the first villain was Morgan Le Fay, who's, you know, let's face it, third string. And he got a lot of flack from the readers in the letter columns and on the web posts, the bulletin boards and stuff, saying, you know, where's Ultron? Where's Kang? Where's all of these great villains? And his answer was that, well, I wanted the first story arc to be about the Avengers, to be about them and about their organization and their problems. And I didn't want a villain to overshadow that. I needed a threat. And Morgan, because she can call in, you know, basically every magical creature in myth, provided that threat, but she was sort of intentionally chosen to lowball it. I wonder if that's what's going on in some of these books. I don't know. To be fair, though, that story arc ended after three issues, not eight.
Did one of you guys said you were reading Wonder Woman?
Yeah, I am.
How is that?
Well, they're building up to the big revelation, which is the latest retcon of Wonder Woman, which is that it turns out, it's going to turn out, this is spoiler alert, that Diana is actually the daughter of Zeus. Diana, of course, already has an origin, that she was crafted out of clay and given magical life.
Just like Shaquille O'Neal.
Yeah, but I'm bummed.
Sorry.
She was crafted out of clay, but they have now set it up to where they make a point right before they repeat her origin. Hermes clarifies for the audience that Zeus always appears to his paramours as whatever that paramour most desires and would find irresistible. So presumably, since Zeus can turn into anything when he seduces women, as we have seen in the myths, I mean, he turns everything from various animals to, you know, a golden shower. That
maybe best to say shower of gold there.
Okay, shower of
gold. Chris, how did I know you were going to go there? How did I know you were
going
to go there?
I was going to just keep going. I was just going to keep on.
Sorry. Trying to give you an assist there, buddy. That's all.
Just keep rolling, Jason. We'll pretend nothing happened.
Yeah, okay. But presumably then he immediately goes into the story of Hippolyta going to the beach, making the child out of clay. And the spoiler that it's going to be revealed that she's the daughter of Zeus has already been leaked by DC and through interviews to the media. So I guess if we're going to say that we're reading Wonder Woman, we have to decide whether or not we like that retcon. It makes her less of a pure feminist figure, and it also turns a couple of previous Wonder Woman stories into serious creep fests. And I'm thinking specifically of the wonderful story in Perez's Wonder Woman when Zeus tries to seduce her. And he appears as Zeus, and she's flattered by his attentions, but tells him no. And he says, you don't say no to Zeus. And then that's like the kickoff of a 12-issue story arc where he punishes her and all the Amazons for saying no. If that's his daughter, we've now gone into Luke and Leia Creepsville.
Can I throw in a couple points?
Oh, please.
Thank you. Well, first of all, you know, you're referring to stories that didn't exist and never happened.
Right.
I don't know if you saw the biographical pull they had for Green Lantern in the last issue of JLA, but now his first official appearance is JLA number one, 2011.
Yeah, you, no, you're right. Of course, you're right.
So
you're right.
We're referring to things that never happened. And you know, even if it did, you know, let's face it, a little incest among the Greek gods.
Oh, yeah,
you're just getting warmed up.
No, you're right. You're right.
And secondly. You know, I mean, it's just the thing about it, about Wonder Woman, and this may be my own personal taste coming through, Wonder Woman is the only major character who I do not mind rebooting her origin.
Okay.
Because maybe this is the author of Golden Age talking, you know, a guy who's still flashing back to All-Star Comics number 8.
Yep.
But given that her origin is this strange alchemy between lame and... you know, I really don't mind them redoing her origin.
Yeah.
You know?
It's been redone multiple times.
Yeah. And I never mind it. I mean, it's been done better or worse, but you know, if you want to do something better than hey, guess what? I write Wonder Woman and I'm really into bondage. Can you tell?
Yeah.
You know, if you want to do better than that, go for it. And this thing about Zeus damaging her as a feminist icon. Now, granted, just my gut reaction, but she has a dad, and that's an unfeminist thing.
Oh no! Your point is well made. I only bring it up because it's weird. Because in the book itself, and I'm talking about issue 2 of the new Wonder Woman, she's referred to as the perfect Amazon, specifically because she doesn't have any male influence in her. She is, in other words, they say the reason why she's such a great model for women is because she's completely free of men.
And so
it's weird to set that up as why she's such a great role model and then undercut it. Presumably this is something that we will see as the book develops. But no, you're absolutely right. I mean, obviously women have fathers. So to say that she's a bad role model for women because she has one. No, your point is well made.
Okay. All right. Just checking.
Mm-hmm.
So who's reading Hawkman?
That would be me. Me.
All right, tell me. If issue number 1, I really couldn't talk myself into plunking down the money for issue number 2, and I'm sad to say that, but I like Hawkman, I do. Chris, you're still spending money on Hawkman. What are you thinking?
It got better with issue 2. It really did. It has not overcome its fundamental problems of, hey, we're 90s Marvel. We don't have to make sense. We just have to kill people with claws every now and again.
Yeah.
But, you know, they did a little more building up his supporting cast.
That's good.
And it has some, I don't know, maybe this one issue is an aberration, but it had some of the better Marvel touches, like, you know, his friends kidding him about his inability to pay the rent, you know, very kind of Peter Parker-y kind of things.
Yeah.
You know, classic Stan Lee, hey, here's a real-world problem to deal with. And I appreciated that part of it, but just – It just seems to be a book that doesn't know where it wants to go. I mean, we talked last time about how Hawkman really could use a fresh start.
Yeah.
And right off the bat with issue 1, he's already been Hawkman for a while, but he's giving it up. We don't know how he originally became Hawkman. More importantly, we don't know why we should care.
Yeah.
And it may eventually turn into something good, but it just got off on such a bad foot. I don't know who's left other than me, the people like me who are obligated to the spirits of our ancestors, and people that just like seeing people being murdered with claws.
Yeah, I would not mind seeing Hawkman. I think as we said last time, as a period piece in ancient Egypt, that could be fun for miniseries or for a story arc. Or honestly, I like Hawkman back in the 20s and 30s with JSA.
Yeah.
You know, we had the artist that we talked to from IDW. Remember him, Jason?
Oh yeah, you mean Ulysses?
Ulysses, yeah. He did that awesome piece. It looked very Darren Cook of the JSA fighting off War of the Worlds style Martians.
Oh, yeah.
And I would give up several quarts of blood to see that as a miniseries. I like the character. I like the character done more action-oriented pulp. But if it gets good again, I'll be picking up the book. But you know what I liked a lot was Batwoman. I picked up a couple issues this week. And
yeah.
Amazing design, the way they lay out the books. The plot line is kind of good. I have no complaints. I really like it. In fact, Batwoman is the book I wish Batgirl was.
Yeah.
As much as I like Gail Simone, and I love Gail Simone so much, she came over right now to cook her pancakes. But I really wish Batgirl was doing things it's not doing. I think the Mirror is a very odd villain. And
another one of these like new creation third string villains.
Well, he's a villain very specifically written to reflect, no pun intended. I mean, her specific problems with. you know, her past and getting over the thing. And I like Gail Simone has said in interviews, you know, she discovered Batgirl where everyone else did, you know, in the old Batman TV show.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, you like the, you know, the assertive girl wearing the purple, you know, jumpsuit on a motorcycle, taking care of business. That's what I really liked, and I haven't gotten enough of that. I liked this last issue where, you know, her and Dick Grayson were kind of sparring.
Yeah.
But, you know, and this is – I'm going to apologize. I really feel – I feel like what I'm about to express is fanboy nitpicking. And, you know,
I've done that already today. So
we've decried that plenty of times on the forums. And I mean, there's plenty of times I get an email or see a forum post from someone who's picking apart something I've written. And I'm like, you know, buddy, if I were you, I'd go out and have a drink and talk to a pretty girl. But, I'm just going to go ahead and say it. In the recent issue of Batgirl, Mirror blows up a subway car full of people.
Okay.
And, Batgirl tries to stop him and gets it wrong. Doesn't do it. And Dick Grayson shows up to help. And he says, hey, you're back in the field. I'm here to help. And they spar on rooftops, and there's a flashback to when they're recruiting as kids. And basically she says, Dick, can you do this on my own? Back off. This is all me. Which I understand as a character arc. She's coming out of the wheelchair. She's discovering herself again. She's coming into her own. The whole quest of the hero.
Yep.
Blah, blah, blah. Her villain just blew up a subway car full of people. It seems like maybe she should take whatever help she can get, you know. Yeah, why don't you go work the docks, see if you can get some leads or something, you know, because
right.
It just seems a little selfish.
Mm.
And like I say, that's a fanboy bitch, and I feel bad for saying it, because I love Gail Simone, love the character, but, you know, it's, yeah. Anyway.
Well, if she didn't sell you on the moment, then she didn't sell you, you know, and that's fair.
I felt like she was writing the scene, thinking about the forum discussions about the scene later. And I feel terrible saying that, because I really, I've got a full run of Secret Six.
Oh, yeah.
And I read all the way through the Ryan Choi Adam, and I loved it, because Gail Simone was writing it. And I read all of her stuff. I love the writer. I really do. I feel like there's so much baggage with his character. There's so many hurdles you have to jump to get to where you can tell. You know, it's a Bat Family Care book. I want people running across rooftops, you know, quipping, yep. You know, clever asides as they're, you know, deducing mysteries and kicking guys in the face. That's really all I want. You know, 22 pages of four color, you know, cleverness and violence. And, I feel like I have to go through a lot of processing before I get that out of Batgirl. And I think I'm getting that right now out of Batwoman.
Well, you know, it's funny that you should call Batwoman that, because you know, when you say what you're describing as your perfect Bat comic, that's a pretty simple recipe. But what's turning people off about Batwoman, and there are people that don't like it, and our other co-host is one of them, he doesn't like it because it's too artsy. It's too highbrow in terms of its graphics and layout. The same thing that, you know, that I love the book for, and I know, Chris, you love this too, the mm-hmm. way that it's laid out on the page, the way that it's just artistically different than everything else on the rack.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Is the same thing that turns off a lot of people. They think it looks like, you know, that it's I don't know, too artsy. I love the book, though. I think it's amazing, and I'm so glad to see Chase back. You know, the
Cameron, right?
Cameron Chase, yeah, Cameron yeah. Chase, the investigator of the, and we're getting a. What's great about this book is that it's really turning into a book that's just packed with really interesting, all distinct women that all have, you know, it's turning into a really interesting girl book. Which I should have expected that, but normally, you know, these sort of female characters, and Batgirl is a great example of this, are sort of existing in a vacuum, you know, like they're like the only woman in the book, you know, and they're surrounded by men. And that's not really what we're seeing here. I mean, we see Gordon once in a while, but it's really kind of about Batwoman and Cameron now. And of course, Batwoman's, not my girlfriend,
You're talking about the okay, she has a female relationship, and then there's her sidekick.
Yeah, no, I'm talking about Maggie Sawyer.
Okay, what's her sidekick's name? Has she kicked her sidekick out this last issue?
Flameburst,
Sunfire, Sun. Okay, so I think we don't know.
She was a Titan for a while.
You know, if the three of us don't know, who does know? I'm just saying. Cause,
well, that's what's great about the characters. That, you know, you can do anything you want with her.
Although I feel kind of bad because last podcast I made the mistake of mistaking MODOK for Armin Zola, so I feel like I'm in turn of my
game. Did you now?
Yeah.
We're going to confiscate your Kirby Crackle, young man.
You know,
it's okay because they probably hang out.
That's true. That's true.
They go to poker night at the AIM headquarters.
So since we have segued into Marvel, very nice there, by the way.
Let me just say, the Annihilators, miniseries, Dynamnet. They're fighting the Avengers, and I'm digging it.
I haven't read it. I was going to talk about X-Men.
Go for it.
Well, I just think it's really interesting. We now have a reboot, you know, and yet another reboot, because I guess it's a fad that never goes out of fashion. I have to figure out. So what are your guys' stance on, you know, Cyclops and Wolverine here? Are we...
I think we should get a room and just stop the pre-show.
Chris?
Oh, wow. You really have me on the spot because, okay, here you're. This is where I should just leave the podcast.
No, I don't care.
You've never read an X-Men book.
I have not read a Marvel book in 31 years.
31 years. What was the event that caused you to stop?
Discovering Girls.
Oh. Oh, it wasn't their fault. It wasn't Marvel Comics' fault.
No, it's puberty.
Because,
what about the hormones?
Because that's why I quit X-Men, was because I quit reading the X-Men when Storm got a mohawk. And that was ruined the character for me. So I stopped reading. This is many, many years ago, of course.
How old are you, Jason?
How old am I? I'm 43.
Okay, see, I'm 39. I thought it was kind of sexy when she got the mohawk. I think maybe that's the difference of a couple of years.
Maybe so. I don't think it's an age thing. I think it's just the gang that we ran with. I was a little bit too white bread. You were more down with the street.
Do you understand I grew up in 8th Avenue, Annapolis?
Okay.
There's no such thing as down the street where I came from. The street had cornfields on both sides and tractors driving slowly down. Sorry, go ahead, please. Yes, I'm from the hood, if by the hood you mean Greenfield. I'm sorry. Greenville, Indiana. It's a beautiful place. You can talk to local politicians at the Kiwanis Club Pancake Supper at
night
every Sunday. Yeah, it's Norman Rockwell. You were saying, please go ahead.
Well, no, I was just talking about X-Men. That's all. The latest reboot of the X-Men attempts to make play something of a shell game. But the idea is that Wolverine has always been established as this sort of loner figure who has nothing but contempt for the kind of school atmosphere.
He's a loner who's in 12 teams. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, you know, you're absolutely right. Yeah, exactly. And whereas Cyclops is the guy who's supposedly the heir to Charles Xavier's dream and something of a wimp. And so what these two books now try to do is reverse that. So now Wolverine is now running the school, and Cyclops has founded a new X-Men team, which is intentionally attempting to be Earth's Mightiest Heroes. They've stolen the Avengers subtitle and are attempting to be like the biggest, meanest, baddest team on the block. So you're trying to make Cyclops cool and tough at the same time that you're trying to make Logan into a mentor figure for a school. So it's a big challenge, but the book is interesting. It's thought-provoking. In the first issue of Uncanny, which is Cyclops' team, it ends with a letter, an open letter by Cyclops basically to the world, in which he essentially invokes an Israel analogy. He says, basically, mutants are a country with weapons of mass destruction, and we're never going to let anybody step on us again. And they decided to essentially capitalize on the idea that mutants are feared. We're going to be so feared, we're going to be the most fearsome things in the world, and that's going to create peace and goodwill in the world.
Is there something like the X-Men universe can kind of sort of be detached from the rest of the Marvel Universe completely?
Well, No, it does cross over. It bleeds over, and there are...
Well, no, I mean, there are crossovers. It's kind of like Image crossing over with Marvel, or the occasional DC and Marvel crossover, because things that happen in the X-Men universe, I'm like, well, damn, Captain America would be showing up right now if this were really happening.
Right, right. Well, no, in this case, it's specifically in the same universe, because, for example, in this issue, the X-Men show up and at this major disaster, and somebody says, oh, we're so glad you're here. We're calling the Avengers. And Cyclops says, oh, don't bother. If we can't do it, there's no way they can do it. So it's specifically in-universe, you know, and he's invoking the Avengers. We'll see. Yeah.
Okay, cool. You know, I have to – go ahead.
No, that's it. I'm done.
The X-Men were in a strange place when I was in junior high and discovering comics. My first comic book was Secret Wars, which was my introduction to comic books and Marvel in general. And the X-Men were kind of the bad boys of the Marvel universe. And it was, you know, I knew kids who would scribble X-Men on their, you know, notebooks, because it was like punk rock. It was cool. But yeah, I think at some point, if Cyclops is going to be the prominent character he is in the X-Men universe, he has to stop being such a pussy.
Right, right. Yeah. A lot of people happen for that.
I mean, they're trying to do to Cyclops what their Geoff Johns is subconsciously doing to Aquaman, which is butch him up a little bit.
Yes.
And I would argue Morrison already did this to Aquaman pretty well 10 years ago. But, you know, Geoff Johns, he's a superstar. He can do what he wants to do. I'm not going to, you know. If I was in a bar with Geoff Johns right now, I'd buy him a beer and compliment him profusely. But I'm just saying maybe he's running over ground that someone else already plowed pretty hard. But, you know.
Well, speaking of, let's give full credit. Let's acknowledge the fact that Grant Morrison was playing off what Peter David had started.
You are correct, sir.
Yeah, because although Morrison was doing his best with Aquaman, it was not Aquaman's book. It was the JLA, and so any changes that he made to the character had to be pretty minor. You know, he couldn't really transform Aquaman's life because he didn't have permission to do that. Aquaman had his own book, sort of, irregularly.
I really miss Aquaman when he had the whole Sub Diego thing going on. I said it before on the podcast. I really enjoyed that. But
that was a good story.
Yeah. Well, all right. Let's see. What else are we reading? Let me see. Like I said, Dead End that I love. Heroes for Hire from Marvel. I'm really enjoying. Planetfall.
Heroes for Hire these days.
Heroes for Hire is a Misty Knight running basically Birds of Prey, but in Marvel Universe.
I see.
And basically she has 4 or 5 heroes in every issue. It follows a little story arc every issue. She's tracking down. The most recent one was the Spider Island story arc. She was dealing with the – everyone gets Spider-Man's powers in Manhattan and hell breaks loose. Before that, there was ground-based drug dealers were getting Hook, which is a narcotic from Atlantis, and they were selling it in the streets of New York and creating havoc. And every book she contracts 4 or 5 different heroes to help deal with different parts of it. And maybe in the first one, you know, Red Falcon helps track down a semi-truck that's delivering drugs to a warehouse. And then they get the manifest in the truck, and then maybe Silver Sable raids the warehouse. Maybe Moon Knight tracks down the dealer. And that's a great writer. That's a cool book. And of course, he works with Andy Lanning, I should say.
Right, right.
A lot of fun. I enjoy his cosmic stuff, so I've been reading The Annihilators. DC... Let's see, what have I checked out recently? Justice League International is pretty good. It's not as much fun as it was back in the 90s, but I'm digging it. I actually picked up Frankenstein Agent of Shade.
Oh, yeah.
Month, and a little too verbose for what it was. You have the Future Commandos on Alien Planet, you know, fighting spiders, giant spiders. I kind of wanted more splash pages of, you know, combat against giant spiders, but, you know, it was cool.
I can't warm up to the art in that book. I really want to like Frankenstein, but the art's really turning me off.
It's pretty clearly got a second-tier artist working it, or it's a guy who's not really into concepts. I'm digging the book, but yeah, it's, you know, I can step up the art. My understanding is that Dan Didio is cracking the whip hard in DC.
Yeah, that's right.
Books are on time, books are out every month, so I think you're going to see some art slipping, and it's probably going to affect trade sales. But yeah, it's you know, I've been enjoying it. Like I said, Batgirl and Batwoman I already weighed in on. That's kind of what I've been checking out lately. I'm still picking up Men at War, which I'm liking, but it's not. I was kind of wanting more of a Battlefield, what Greffiness was doing over at IDW, or no, Boom Comics, sorry. But, you know, it's okay. It's more Sergeant Rock in a superhero universe, or Sergeant Rock's, you know, great nephew in a superhero universe. So, it's okay. Justice League of America. I got to say, the flagship book is still working out for me pretty well.
Good.
What do you guys think about that?
Well, my main observation was what Chris already mentioned in general, which is how slow the story is going. It's taking forever to get the team together. And for the very first issue, I have to say, turned me off. I thought the whole sort of Batman-Hal interaction was, I don't know, terribly stilted and fake. Chris, what did you think of JLA?
I saw that Cyborg was in the team and said, pass.
Oh, really?
Yes.
That's all it took, huh, was Cyborg.
Yeah. Yeah, because I am militantly wedded to the concept of it being the Big Seven. I don't care if you've got the big six and somebody else in there. I going back to the Brad Meltzer run, I referred it to the Ringo spot. I enjoyed the Brad Meltzer run to give you a comparison, except for the fact that why is Geo-Force here? Why is Vixen here? what do these people do to deserve to be in the Justice League? And Cyborg is just, he's a Titan.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Again, I'm going to be like the Psycho Pirate after the first crisis. They're going to haul me off in a straitjacket, and I'm going to be talking about, I remember the way it used to be.
Yeah.
And goodness knows, for Cyborg, he's probably much happier to be in a Geoff Johns book than he is the abortion that's being put out monthly under the Titans banner.
Yeah.
But good gosh, I would much rather see Cyborg in a good Titans book than I would seeing him taking John Jones' place, because it just doesn't seem to be the JLA without John Jones for me.
Yeah,
I hear Tiny Titans is pretty good. The kind of cartoony. Yeah, I'm just saying. You know, I don't know why they don't keep on. Everyone loved the Teen Titans cartoon on DC on the Cartoon Network. I wonder why they don't keep on doing that in book form.
I think the audiences are very different. The people that watch the animated cartoon aren't the people that buy the comic book on the shelves. You know, young adult, because all ages books. No, DC has not figured out how to do those very well yet, and they've tried many times, and they just can't get them to sell. Even when they're based off of really great, even when they are really good, the books are really good, they still don't sell.
Oh, can I clarify a point real quick?
Please do.
It was 50% Cyborg and 50% those awful, awful, awful Jim Lee costume redesigns.
Oh, yeah, they're terrible.
Yes.
Do you guys ever read a comic book kind of called Short Pact?
No.
Shortpack.com. Yeah, it's a bunch of guys working at basically it's KB Toys, but they call something different, and they make lots of jokes about pop culture. And there's one webcomic where Wally West is drawing lines on his boots.
Yeah.
And comes up and goes, what the hell are you doing? And Wally West is like, this makes me go faster.
All right, I'm bookmarking that.
Yeah, every once in a while he's got some great – he's got one where Bruce Wayne goes on Prozac. Alfred walks in, he's like, Mr. Bruce, shouldn't you be out fighting crime? He's like, no, man, you know you can get movies streamed directly through your Xbox? What the hell?
Oh, gosh.
Because, some serotonin uptake inhibitors would just kill the whole Batman, legacy. Because, hey, I don't feel so bad anymore.
Are you reading anything other than DC?
No, I have not picked up a non-DC book since Radioactive Man.
Radioactive Man, the Simpsons tie-in?
Back when Bongo Comics spun it off into its actual title, and they did this, they started off with a brilliant six-issue miniseries where they had these devastating parodies of like all the great eras in comics.
Yeah,
it was just such a Valentine to longtime comics history. I couldn't say no to that.
Right,
it'd take me out of my little Julie Schwartz comfort zone. Wonderful.
You must love Astro City.
Oh, I do, especially when it got away from Image.
I wish there was more of that. I really do.
I wish it were Astro City still.
It's not anymore. What happened to it?
Well, they keep saying there was an announcement that it was going to be monthly, and then there was the reboot, and then there was nothing.
Yeah.
I didn't know that rebooted. Okay.
And Kurt Busiek was talking about how he had enough of a backlog of stories to where he felt comfortable agreeing to do it monthly. So apparently there's a big stack of Astro City scripts just waiting for somebody to draw them and publish them.
But,
I guess, no references to people's vaginas being like clown cars, so back of the line.
I gotta say, at some point, I just said Astro City, and I'm going to pick you up on trade paperback, because it was such a heartbreaker. The Steeljack story arc took me so long to finish in monthly comics.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm just going to wait for the trades. I love it, but it's killing me. So, it's too bad. Why don't you guys run and buy the license for that? I'm sorry, I know I've had John and Steve and everybody else on. I could ask them, but you were here now, Chris, so you get to be the honest of this question.
Okay, keeping in mind, I have absolutely nothing to do with the business decisions that Green Running makes. That's why they're still in business.
See, I think that's what you want us to think, Chris. You're like the Godfather. You're like a shell corporation no one knows about, but you're kind of running things. Tell me it's not true.
No.
But I want to hear what you actually think about this, Chris.
Here's the thing. I was just going to point out, as someone who has no interest other than being the beneficiary of Ronin's largesse for the past decade, if you were to draw a line between RPG companies that have gotten expensive licenses and correlate that to another line on the graph of companies that went out of business shortly thereafter, it's pretty much 99%.
Well, you know what they say about how you make a large fortune in a small fortune in RPGs?
Start with a large,
large
one.
Fortune, yeah. And
yeah, Brandon Blackmore gave me that line first, I think about 2 years ago.
I hate to say that in association with some friends of ours, but and lots of art, good production values do not always equal profit, sadly.
Well, do you know the book San Angelo?
I'm afraid I do not.
It's a city source book for
Wait, is that Brown Brepper Games?
I don't think so.
It was Gold Rush, Mark Arsenault, wasn't it?
It was Gold Rush Games, that's right. That's right. Well, Kurt Busiek wrote an introduction to that book. And he says in that book that this is as close as you are ever going to get to an Astro City RPG. Because apparently he has no interest in licensing it.
Mm-hmm.
But that he really liked the work that was done in that book. And it was very real, and it was about, it was a great setting that it was playing with a lot of the same themes and in the same spirit as Astro City.
Well, and, funny story, Freedom City started out as the East Coast companion to San Angelo.
Oh, really?
It was originally going to be done through Gold Rush, and then Mark decided that he'd had enough of the game industry and decided to go into something less stressful, and that's why he's with the LAPD again.
He's a wise man, Mark is.
yes. And it was only after Mark had to pass on it that Steve took it to Ronin.
Yeah.
And history was made.
Yes. See, folks, this is why you tune into the BAM podcast. We give you this esoteric game industry trivia you don't get anywhere else.
Yeah.
Because you get esoteric game business trivia is more esoteric than like comics trivia, because everyone reads Burns Forum or Eric Larson's blog or Jim Shooter's been writing thousands of words about Marvel in the old days, but no one talks about working in the RPG industry because we're all very polite.
Oh, totally.
On the air, everyone is polite. There are certain publishers who everyone hates who no one will say a damn thing about on the air. And it's true, and who I'm talking about.
Now, all of our listeners, and I mean all four of them, are wondering who you're talking about.
You're right. I'm not going to say, because I don't want to have a flame war with the very referencing, parenthetically. But, there are people in the business who everyone knows are bastards. And it's just out there. And if you have drinks at conventions, you talk to people, they're like, yeah, he dicked me over. Yeah, he owes me money. Yeah, he lied to me. But no one says a goddamn thing. In comics, they'll say, this guy dicked me over. Yeah, this guy lied to me. And, I think it's because there's enough money in comics, you can actually sue somebody and it's worth something. In games, I recently had a dispute with a publisher, and my lawyer...
How much is it for? Pizza money?
Pretty much. My lawyer was like, you would win this fight. You would humiliate him in public. and it would cost you hundreds of dollars to do so. Is it worth that to you? Walk away. Walk away from your IP. Walk away from the books. Just walk away and whistle a jaunty tune and do something else with your life, because it's cost too much money in this fight. And that's the RPG of business. I mean, that's what people can be bastards and get away. Sorry. Am I rambling? Let me stop rambling, and let's talk about comics again. Sorry.
We're almost done.
Well, listen, I do actually have a comic-related point I want to bring up. But in defense, okay, the most wonderful, generous, special, loving people I've ever met, I've met through the game industry. Yes, there are bad people out there, but there's an infinity more of good and great people that I adore. So let's make sure that's clear.
And you are correct, sir. I will not dispute that point. There are great folks in the business.
But something new showed up in my comic pile that I think was perfectly illustrated something that we were talking about last time. So I thought I would throw that into the discussion.
Please do.
Okay, one of the things that we talked about last time was I think all four of us had just the overwhelming impression that whatever else was going on in this reboot, there wasn't a whole lot of editorial oversight over at least some of the books. And I have proof positive that nobody was paying attention, at least full attention, because I got the absolute delight of my buy pile, and that's the first issue of this new Shade Maxi series. So it's James Robinson returning to Opal City and writing these great characters again. Hallelujah, hallelujah.
Yep.
And okay, should we say spoiler alert? Spoiler yep. alert. Okay.
Spoiler Turn off your podcast now, people.
Okay. Yeah. But, you know, it's Opal City. It's The Shade. It's Michael Thomas, Starman. And at the end, Deathstroke the Terminator shows up. And I got to the end of it, enjoyed it, and then started thinking about it in terms of the reboot. And I started thinking, wait a second.
Yeah.
Is Deathstroke on Earth 2 now? Or is The Shade in Opal City on Earth 1? If so, how did Jack Knight ever become Starman since his dad is on Earth 2? You know, I could see the reboot unbooting in my mind. Yeah. You know, how is this even possible? You know, is it, you know, I mean, I remember back in the days of the old Brave and the Bold when, God bless him, Bob Haney was just monthly taking a leak on continuity, and they just eventually said, Brave and the Bold takes place on Earth B. It's a world where Bob can do whatever the heck he wants. You know, it's that level of sloppiness in terms of continuity. Now, yeah. Of course, you know, in me, in my world, I'm starting thinking, this is a pre-reboot story that snuck out.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's how I'm going to try to continue to enjoy it. But, you know,
that's probably true.
It's a wonderful book that is just a poke in the eye of the reboot and everything it stands for. Maybe I'd love it that much more for that reason.
Honestly, if I were DC, I'd run adult only book just called Fuck the Reboot. You know, just with stories out of continuity set in previous continuity, and I know enough old comic spread arms who would love that shit.
I can't help but do you think that it's going to be like Heroes Reborn, you know, that they're going to run this for like a year and a half and then say we fucked up and turn it all back?
Well, I'll say this much, okay? And listen, I have to give full credit to this, okay? DC added a zero or two to the sales figures
yes.
of all of their books. So, again, somebody is getting rich by not listening to me.
Right.
So, I think some of those zeros are going to have to fall off before there's any discussion of making any changes for reasons other than not being able to follow Dan's tight editorial control or missing a deadline.
Yeah.
Do you guys ever read bleedingcool.com?
All the time, yeah.
All right, about a year ago, someone was saying, Dan Didio is not long for this position. Something's going to happen. Warner Brothers is looking at the sales numbers and going, what's up? And then, you know, I think Dan looks at the numbers himself and says, all right, everybody, tap dance. And, oh, my God, it worked. I mean, Marvel Comics is, in the next month's books, they're issuing a lot, you know, tons more, multiple reprints of their best-selling copies, best-selling series, because they're trying to catch up. They're trying to be number one again, because they've been number one for 15 years, and now DC takes it away from them. So, I will quibble about the things Dan Didio has done, and there are previous, you know, decisions he's made, and, you know, I think Gail Simone's leaving Firestorm, which was a decent book because she's pissed off at Dan's tinkering. All the advertising they've done, all the promotion, just all the sheer volume of people bitching online serves the purpose of massive advertising. It raises the awareness, and this stuff's been selling. So, you know. I mean, we had Kyrax 2 online talking about her experience in San Diego, the Batgirl of San Diego.
Yes.
And she made lots of good points. The attention that brought, you know, both good and bad, people are buying the books to see, hey, what was she talking about?
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's working. For how long, who knows, but it's working.
Yeah.
And, you know, it may have been an accident or maybe on purpose, but, you know, we genius move to make DC Comics completely unreadable right before the reboot.
Well,
to the point where they had to get better.
Some of the books were all right. Batman was pretty good. And as you pointed out, Batman and Green Lantern really didn't reboot.
Yeah.
So, all right. So we've talked about various books. What else are we reading we haven't talked about yet?
Well, my time's up, Chief. It is, I'm afraid. Can we plan on another session after the...
Well, you know, my experience is it's almost impossible to schedule podcasts with multiple people in December because it's the crazy season. So why don't we just think about January?
A New Year's week podcast.
Yeah,
we could do it on New Year's Eve, and we could drink through the show, and it would get better and better and better as it got more coherent.
Would you guys promise to drink on the show with me? Because I would love that.
Well, if everybody else is doing it, of course I have to bow to peer pressure.
Well,
I have to set the example.
The only way you get me to shut up is I'll drink a couple of glasses and pass out.
You're like that friend in high school who's like, does one shot. Okay.
Totally, yes.
You know, Chris, I'm always drinking on the podcast, so you can just feel peer pressure whenever you want. I would love that. We can argue about Jim Shooter. That would be fantastic.
Well, we got to stop having him on school nights.
You're not the first teacher at your school to drink on a school night. You know that, Chris?
Yeah, and all the rest of them are unemployed right now.
Real? Well, it's tough to kind of make a second happen.
You've got a point.
Chris, can I ask you a question?
Absolutely.
Every time I open up the newspaper, there's some other student who's having sex with one of their teachers.
No,
I mean, this happens all the time. It's not like
I'm alarmed that you're bringing me up in this context.
Well, no, Chris, I think you're a man of high moral turpitude.
Thank you. God bless you. Yes.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, I shouldn't even ask you if you see this at your school, should I? Because you can't say anything, can you?
Not to keep my job. I'll give you a blanket comment.
Okay.
If you think about how many schools and how many teachers there are in this country, and you think about how many people actually call that their career, and you know, I mean, the only thing that keeps us from being a total cross section of the rest of society is we have a college degree, like what huge percentage of the American population right now. And, you know, the fact that, you know, that teachers have some of the same problems and shortcomings that other human beings do, I don't really know why this is a big shock other than the fact that it kills some time in the 24-hour news cycle.
Okay, you make a fair point. Okay. And once again, just to emphasize, I'm not questioning your morality at all, sir. I understand that you're a paragon in the community.
Me?
No, the other Chris McLaughlin that we have on the show.
It caught me off guard because, you know, I'm the bad kid who became a teacher. So, you know, me being a role model, that's a shoe I'm not used to wearing. Although I guess it's been on there for 17 years now. I suppose I should admit it sooner or later.
You were a bad kid?
Oh, good Lord. I had there's probably a chair named after me in the principal's office of my high school, you know, just because I spent so much time there.
Really?
Yes.
You got into fights and stuff?
No. Ours was just sheer bloody mayhem.
What does that mean?
Vandalism, practical jokes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
You know. What we consider victimless crimes.
I hear you. Okay, well, I understand Jason has to go because he's got things he must attend to.
I have a stack of grading, and I have to teach war comics tomorrow, so I have to read Safe Area Garage Day tonight.
Wow.
Joe Sacco's wonderful comics journalism book on the Bosnian War.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's very, very cool. And this came out with a new edition of it, so it's hardback. It's got tons of photographs and journal entries from him during that time period. So it's a wonderful book.
I've never heard of that before. That's pretty cool.
Safe Area Garage Day. Joe Sacco also did Palestine, a war comic called Palestine about the civilians in the Israel-Palestinian conflict. Anyway, it's really great stuff. But yeah, no superheroes anywhere in sight. It's very much a kind of inspired by alternative comics.
Okay, cool. All right, Chris, any closing thoughts?
Well, just an honor and a pleasure to talk to you gentlemen as always, and thanks to anybody who listened.
Yeah, absolutely. What he said.
All right, folks, thanks for tuning in. Until next time, this is the Banff Podcast signing off. And the bigger button